Good morning, Rabotai. We are continuing our study of Eshet Chayil. We're on the fourth pasuk, and we have a very, very powerful connection to Parashat Ki Tavo. It's actually from the first pasuk of the parasha that talks about our subject in a very big way. It says here, V'haya ki tavo el ha'aretz, when you will come to the land of Israel. That means we're about to discuss a mitzvah that only is relevant in the land of Israel. As we know, most of the mitzvot are relevant anywhere in the world. But there are some mitzvot that are unique to the land of Israel, and this is one of them. That's why the pasuk begins, Ve'aya ki tavo el ha'aretz, when you will come to the land of Israel, Asher Adonai Elohecha noten lecha nachala, the land that Hashem is giving you as your inheritance, Virishta means that you're going to capture it, which means that this mitzvah doesn't happen when you come to the land of Israel. You're still not obligated in the mitzvah. You first have to capture the land. That took many years in order to get control of the land of Israel from the people that were living there at the time. So this mitzvah only happens after we capture the land. Ve'yashavtaba. And even then, we're not obligated until we settle the land. It means after they captured it, they had to divide it to give everyone their portion. It was a process. It took 14 years, this process. So this mitzvah that we're commanded, we're about to learn, is a mitzvah that happens only when we enter the land of Israel, when we capture it, and when we settle it. So if you look in Rashi, Alav HaShalom, the first Rashi in the parasha, Rashi says, Magid. From here we're learning, Shelo nithayevu bebikurim. The mitzvah that we're talking about today is the mitzvah of bikurim. When a farmer brings his first fruits to the Beit HaMikdash. The word Bikurim is from the word Bechor. Bechor is the firstborn. Bikurim is the first fruits. This mitzvah, says Rashi, we see from here, that you're not obligated to come and give the Bikurim ad shekavshu et ha'aretz, until they captured the land, v'hilekua, and they divided it. So that means a farmer who has fruits, before this time, there is no mitzvah. The bikurim started after 14 years. There is a major problem with this pasuk and this Rashi. Because if you open up the Midrash says the following. Ki tavo el ha'aretz, says the Midrash, that this pasuk is coming to teach you something. Aseh mitzvah Ha'amura ba'anyan, says the Midrash. Fulfill the mitzvah I'm about to tell you. Shebischara, that as a reward, of this mitzvah, tikanes la'aretz. Which means the Midrash is understanding that ki tavo la'aretz is not just telling you when to fulfill the mitzvah, that's the simple reading, but the Midrash is saying it's also the cause of why you will have the land of Israel. Ki tavo la'aretz, you want to know why I'm going to give you the ability to come to the land of Israel. You want to know what zechut? You need zechut in life for important things, especially of holiness. You need a merit. A person who has zechut, Hashem gives them the ability to give charity. Giving charity is a big zechut. Don't think that a person who makes the right choice to give charity, it started with the right choice. Hashem first had to give him the zechut. He had to give him the merit to even be in that situation. And it's not only about making money. There are plenty of people who make money and don't have the zechut to give money. Why don't they have the zechut? That's a different question. Not only do they need the zechut to give money, but they have to give money to the right places. There's plenty, plenty of wasted money that is given to all types of situations that don't really add up. So here's a guy giving all kinds of money, but it's not going anywhere. That's a person who doesn't have the zechut. So in order to have the zechut, A, you have to make money. B, you have to have the opportunity of giving it. And you have to have the right place that it's actually making a difference. That's all you need zechut for that. The more you live in this world, the more you realize that some people, you could just see, have the zechut. And some people, they don't have the zechut. I'll give you a story of a zechut. Years ago, this must have happened 150 years ago, around that time. There's a very famous yeshiva in Europe called the Yeshiva of Chachmei Lublin. It's a big yeshiva. I believe the building is still up today. And when they built this building, they made a very big gathering and they invited many great rabbis and great people from all around Europe to come and attend the groundbreaking ceremonies. And there was a man who they were honoring. He was the one that gave the money or the significant money for this building. So they were honoring him. It was a very festive, beautiful occasion. One of the great rabbis there went over to this man and he said to him the following. If I was there, I would have told him, Hazaku Baruch, beautiful job. What a zechut you have. You're helping. What a choice he made. This rabbi went over to him and said, I want to ask you, what zechut did you have? What have you done in your life that you had the zechut to give the money for this jishiv? See, that's how great people think. We think the zechut is this. What do you mean? I'm making the zechut now. No. This zechut is very big. You don't just get this kind of zechut. One day you wake up and they throw you a zechut like that. When you have a big zechut, means a big opportunity, It had to have come from something else that you've done that may not have been as grand, that may not have been as big. And that allowed this zechut to happen. That's the way of Hashem's world. Hachamim tell us, mitzvah goreret mitzvah. That the way of Hashem's running the world is a mitzvah, it drags another mitzvah. Which means that opportunities to do important things in this world come because of other mitzvot that you've done. You might do a mitzvah in your home to help your wife in a difficult situation, and from that mitzvah, you had the zechut to build a yeshiva. Usually, the ones that you do that earn you the zechut are usually not public ones. They're usually private ones. They're usually ones that nobody notices. That's why it's very tricky. Because a person wants to do big things in this world. So what does he do? He waits for the big things. But the big things, they don't come. Because big things need zechut. And usually the zechut is from the small things. So you have a guy who asked you for help on the side and you said, what is this going to do? Big deal. And you dismissed the small opportunity. You have no idea that you just dismissed the big zechut that opportunity was bringing you. That's why the Torah says, Vehaya ekev tishme'un. Torah says, be careful from the small things of life. Not only because small things are important, but the only way that a person can get to the big things is you have to do the small things. The small things are your ticket to the big opportunity. What an unbelievable understanding of reality. To do the big things in this world, whether it's big in charity, or if it's big in any other spiritual accomplishment, you need a zechut. And the zechuyot that you need will come in ways you never imagined would be that important. And when you take advantage of the small things in your home, the small relationships in your life, the small opportunities that come your way, it opens up tremendous opportunity. So when you see a guy who had the zechut of building a yeshiva, most people are saying, wow, what a zechut, what a choice. But great people are sitting, scratching their head. How in the world did you get that zechut? What did you do? Because great zechuyot like that don't happen unless there was something planted before that. This is the way of the spiritual world. Don't dismiss the small opportunities. And this is an example. Hashem says, I'm going to give you the land of Israel. The land of Israel is a beautiful land. It's beautiful on every level. It's a powerful land. It's a land that's connected to the Creator. It's a land the entire world wants. Hashem says, I'm going to give it to you. Wow, thank you. But you need zechut. You don't get the land of Israel. Maybe you get a house on Avenue S without zechut. That could be. You don't need zechut to buy a 40 by 100.
an Avenue T.
For physical things in life, you don't need a big zechut. But to get the land of Israel with all that it gives our people, you need zechut for that. So Hashem says, okay, says the Midrash, where does the zechut of the land of Israel come from? From the mitzvah of Bikurim. V'haya, ki tavo el ha'aretz. When you come to the land of Israel, you want to know how you will come to the land of Israel? You want to know what merit you have when you come to the land of Israel? When you give the Bikurim. When you give the Bikurim, that's your ticket to the land of Israel. That's what the Midrash says. There's an obvious problem in this whole story. On one end, you tell me that the mitzvah Bikurim only starts after you capture the land and you settle it. And then you tell me the merit of going to the land of Israel is the mitzvah Bikurim. But you didn't do the mitzvah Bikurim yet. How could the mitzvah Bikurim be the merit if it didn't happen yet? It's a very big question. This question is so relevant to so much more than Bikurim and Eretz Yisrael. Let me share with you a Mishnah, a very powerful Mishnah, in Pirkei Avot. Says the Mishnah in Perek Gimel, Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa Omer, says the great Tana, listen to this important secret that people in life are not usually aware of. He says, Kol shema'asav merubin mechokhmato, someone whose actions exceed his wisdom, which means he does more than he knows, chokhmato mitkayemet, his wisdom will stand for him. He is going to be successful. Obvious question, how can someone have his actions exceed his wisdom? How could you do things that you don't know about? My actions exceed my wisdom means that I know less than what I do. But in order to do, I have to know. So how in the world can a person do more than he knows? It's like saying, I'm going to do 100 mitzvot, but I only know about 50 of them. But if you only know 50, you can't do 100. How can this guy even exist? Who is this person? Shema'asav, that his actions merubin, they exceed his wisdom. How could that be? Comes Rabbeinu Yonah Alav HaShalom, one of the great Rishonim, and says that this Mishnah is giving Aitzah Tova. Aitzah Tova means you have good advice. Don't squander it. Mishnah is telling us, pay attention to a person who needs zechut. That's not the words he said, but the way I'm saying it. He says it, Lemi she'eno yodea she'lo ye'abed nafsho. He says it in much stronger terms. His language doesn't fit in today's sensitive souls. I said in order to have zechut, but what he said, a guy who's worried not to go to Gehinnom. So if I said that here, people would all leave. So I don't say that. But what he's saying is real. He's saying that in this world we have a soul. Hashem gave us Elohai neshama shenatata bi tehora. Hashem gave us a most beautiful, a most pure neshama. And this neshama we get for a few years, not forever. We get this neshama, and our job, as we say every single morning, as a reminder, Elohai neshama shenatata bi tehora. Hashem, we have Elohai, we talked to him in a private conversation. The neshama you gave me is pure. Ata berata, you created it. Ata yesarta, you formed it. Ata nefachta bi, and you blew it into me. Ve'ata meshamera bekirbi, which means one of the great miracles of a human is his ability to connect the physical and the spiritual. The physical is physical. The spiritual has no physical attribute. How do they connect? That's what we say. Asher yatzar umafli la'asot. Hashem does wonders in our body. Some explain, what's the wonders? How does Hashem connect a physical entity with a non-physical entity? To connect things, they have to be physical. They have to be the same. How does the neshama connect to the body? It's impossible. They're working on two different levels. They don't mix. If oil and water don't mix, how is it possible to mix physical and spiritual? But Hashem ve'ata meshamera bekirbi, which means you do what you do to keep it inside of me. The only reason we're alive today and sitting here is because our neshama is being watched by the Creator to stay inside. The difference between a live person and a person who lost his life is his neshama checked out. His eyes are there, his legs are there, everything is there, but his neshama was no longer with him. Hashem watches this neshama inside of our body. Ve'ata atid litela mimeni. You're going to take this neshama from my body. It's not forever, this neshama. This neshama spends a number of years in this world. A person, says Rabbeinu Una, who's concerned about his neshama. In today's world, maybe it's not so popular to talk about things that are real. But this is real. As real as it gets. Every one of us has a neshama. And every one of us has what to do with that neshama. One, you have to be careful not to infect it. Not to dirty it. Not to make it unattractive. The neshama gets affected not by soil, but by spiritual dirt. When a person eats the wrong thing, it infects his soul. When a person says the wrong things, it infects his soul. And besides that, a person needs to promote his neshama, needs to elevate his neshama. By learning Torah, by doing mitzvot, by changing his midot, by becoming a refined person. An angry person doesn't have a refined neshama. You gotta fix it. You gotta take care of that soul with your thoughts, with your eyes, with your ears, with your words, with your actions, to be a selfless person. To be a humble person, to be a person of kindness, to be a person of compassion, to be a person who's connected to the Creator. Shiviti Hashem lenegdi tamid, to live life with Hashem next to you, to be aware of His presence, to be appreciative, to be thankful, to be an Eved Hashem. The neshama is some asset, the most precious asset that God gave us. There's nothing more precious than our neshama. And everything that we do makes a difference. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, a person who's worried about his neshama. Unfortunately, we don't worry enough about our neshama. When our finger hurts, we start to worry. When our feet hurt, we start to worry. When the doctor says, oh, I think I found something, we start to worry. All that is just a mashal. Hashem made hospitals and doctors and physical issues. All that we should be reminded of the real issues of the neshama. When you have a physical issue to worry about, it's meant to remind you of the spiritual problem, not the physical issue. We spend our life trying to be physically healthy. Make sure we exercise, make sure we eat right, make sure we go for checkups. And if something goes wrong, we gotta go to the best doctors. Where's the best doctor? Everyone's going to the best doctors. Everyone's doctor is the best one. Amazing how many best doctors there are. He's number one in the field. Why does everyone say that? Because everyone, when it comes to their physical well-being, they want the best. So they have to convince themselves somehow, the guy's the best. How can I give my body anything less than the best? But that whole section of life, you ever wonder why Hashem made that whole section of life? You don't think Hashem could have made a world without hospitals and without doctors and without physical issues? Does a rock ever go to the hospital? Doesn't need to. You don't think Hashem could have made us sturdy and strong? But the whole idea of a physical hospital is that a person should be reminded of a spiritual hospital. In fact, the Torah gives us 613 mitzvot. Why 613? 248 positive mitzvot. Things that we need to do. 365 mitzvot that are stay away from. Why that number? Azal tell us, because that number is the exact same number as our physical makeup. We have 248 limbs and 365 sinews. Which means that the spiritual reality is very much connected to the physical reality. That when a person is having a physical issue, it should be a reminder for him that he needs to worry about his soul. And the same way God made pain physically, where a person feels tremendous pain, doesn't feel right, doesn't feel comfortable. What did he create pain for? You don't think God can make the world without pain? You go to the hospital, they give you a little shot and there's no more pain. You don't think God has some of that medicine himself? But by the way, the same way there's physical pain, there's also spiritual pain. The difference between spiritual pain and physical pain is that physical pain, there's nothing to do. Unless you treat it, there's nothing to do. But when it comes to spiritual pain, because there needs to be free choice, Hashem allows us to put it away. A person feels every once in a while. Every person knows this. Every once in a while, you get like a bat call, a heavenly voice somewhere inside of you. It's like, come on, what are you doing? Sometimes it's guilt that we feel. Sometimes we just know that we should be doing better. We know that's not the way we're supposed to be talking. We know there's more to life than this. That's so selfish. Why'd you do that? Why'd you spend all that kind of money on yourself when you could have helped people? What are you wasting time in certain things that could have been used in such better places? Every single one of us, every single one of us has a voice that makes the person feel a little uncomfortable. Sometimes a person is sad. A person doesn't feel simha. What is sadness? Where does sadness come from? It comes from the same place that simha comes from. Simha is an expression of the human soul. Simha doesn't come from my fingers. Doesn't come from my eyes. It comes from my neshama. That's why babies are so happy, unless there's something bothering them, because their neshama is pure. When a person is not happy, when a person is down, that's an expression of the pain of his soul. Of course, he can ignore it. Or maybe go on another vacation. Maybe that's going to heal your soul. Maybe, you know what, the car that you have isn't the one yet. You need the next level car. That's what it is. Maybe you need another apartment somewhere in the world. Maybe buy another one in Bangladesh somewhere, because you already have in 7 other places. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe you need an airplane. Maybe that's going to do it. We feel the pain of the soul and we figure out a way to make it go away. Instead of solving the problem, like going to a doctor and taking out the problem, we just take some morphine. Just like there's morphine in the physical world. Morphine doesn't solve your problem. It feels like your problem is solved, but you've done nothing. It missed your problem. There's also in the spiritual world the same thing. You're medicating yourself all day long by another item, another thing, another idea, another thing to look forward to. You're not paying attention to your soul. That's what Rabbi Yonah says. I said it much nicer, but he says it much more correct. He says a guy who's worried about his soul. What should a guy do if he's worried about his soul? What can he do? Says Rabbi Yonah, an unbelievable thing. He says, Sheyekabel al atzmo. He says this person should accept upon himself la'asot kol ha-devarim, to fulfill all of the items, all the things, all the words asher yagidu lo hachamim ve'lo yasur mehen yamin u'smol ka'asher yeda'am. A person who says, okay, I feel the pain of my soul. I got it. It's not so hard to figure it out. It's very easy to locate. If you're taking a lot of morphine, you know you have a lot of issues. If you're spending a lot of time in your world trying to medicate yourself in different ways, you know you have to figure this out. He says, your solution, very simple. Much more simple than we would imagine. He says, accept upon yourself. Go into a room for 5 minutes. Sit down with yourself and think. And accept upon yourself that you will commit yourself to listen to the words of the wise people. That you will listen to the words of the Creator. That you will feed your soul with Torah, and you'll feed your soul with mitzvot, and you'll feed your soul with midot tovot, good character. He says, listen to these words, umiyad, miyad, You go into a room for 5 minutes. 5 minutes with nobody around. Not your wife, not your parents, not your children, not your friends. Shut down your phone. Just sit for 5 minutes. And think about your soul. Think about what you say every morning. And you come out with clarity that you are committed. He says, "Umiyad shekibela zo yekabel al atzmo bilevav shalem ubnefesh hametz apetza." He says, immediately, when you make this commitment to yourself, ma'ale alav sachar ke'ilu kibel alav kol ha-mitzvot, it's considered as already you've done it all. A real commitment doesn't need for things to happen. It's already done. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's what it means. Ma'asav merubin mechokhmato. How could your actions be greater than what you know? Because you're committed to do whatever you will know. Once you're committed to do whatever is right, you know, in life, when we grow up, when we make decisions, usually the decisions are made of, you want to do that? I'm not sure if I want to do it. The way we decide things is, do I want or I don't want? That's the American way. Do I want or I don't want? That's the way I make decisions. I want to go or I don't want to go. I want to buy, I don't want to buy. But says Rabbeinu Yonah, that doesn't work with your soul. Because very often what you want is not what's good for you. The decision making in life has to be of what is correct to do. What is good for me? What is right for me? Not what do I want. Very often our emotions and desires mislead us. A person who's committed to do whatever is right, just tell me what's right. I don't know what's right, but I'm ready to do what's right. If you're ready to do what's right, before the meeting with the rabbi, you're already considered done. You're good already. Just a question now of just knowing how to do it. The commitment to do what's right is already done. That's called a person whose actions exceed his wisdom. Since he's committed, his actions already are considered done. His neshama, his soul, has already been treated. He's already considered a man of tremendous accomplishments. He didn't do everything yet, but he's committed to it. Because the person's ratzon, the person's desire to do something is the same in the eyes of the Creator in the spiritual world. It's done. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, and that was the secret of Na'aseh V'Nishma. When Am Yisrael says, we will do, and now we want to hear, says Rabbeinu Yonah, the great statement, what made it special, is that Am Yisrael didn't know what they were about to accept. Maybe the Torah would ask them to fast every day of the year. Maybe the Torah would ask them to live somewhere in the North Pole. Maybe they would have to afflict themselves daily with pain, and who knows? We don't know what it says. How do they know what they're accepting? Says Rabbeinu Yonah, I don't know if he says this fully, but I'm going to say it. He says that when they said Na'aseh V'Nishma, at that point, they fulfilled the whole mitzvah, the whole Torah already. At the moment they said Na'aseh V'Nishma, they already fulfilled 613 mitzvot. Because they were committed to it. I want to add that they even fulfilled more than 613 mitzvot. Because even the mitzvot they weren't given, they also fulfill them. It's as if they fasted every day of the year because they were willing to do that. They were willing to do whatever was given to them. That's also called they fulfilled. That's the power of a person's ratzon. And with this Rabbeinu Yonah and this Mishnah, we can understand better what we just learned in this parasha. We said there's a contradiction. It says when you come to Israel, after 14 years, then the mitzvah bikurim. The Midrash says, what's the merit to come to Israel? The mitzvah bikurim. How does that work? But according to what we're learning, no problem. Because the mitzvah bikurim, the action isn't where it's at. It's in your commitment. If you're committed to bikurim, you did bikurim. Okay, so you have to wait 14 years. That's just the semantics. The real mitzvah is when you want. A person's ratzon is what makes the difference. You know, we're coming up to Rosh Hashanah. If there's any time to learn this Rabbeinu Yonah, it's now before Rosh Hashanah. In Rosh Hashanah, we know that we get judged for the coming year. But it's a very strange kind of judgment. The way we look at judgment is someone did something. He needs to go to court to defend himself about the past. Or a person goes to judgment to see how much they're going to give him for the future. Rosh Hashanah is not the kind of judgment where you go talk about what you did in the past. It's not that kind. We don't talk about the past on Rosh Hashanah. Day of judgment, we would think you should open up the vidui and you should tell the judge, listen, God, I'm guilty. I made a mistake. Go in front of the judge. I can't deny it. I'm sorry. I did this. Yes, I spoke Lashon Hara. I did. I didn't honor my parents the way I'm supposed to. Absolutely. I didn't use my money the way I was supposed to. Yes. Listen, I... The one who admits is compassion for him. What would you do on the judgment day when Hashem is telling you, what's going on with you? I gave you a pure soul. What happened to you? But you're right. I admit. That's what should be on judgment day. But none of that happens on Rosh Hashanah. We don't talk about the past on Rosh Hashanah. We don't make confession Rosh Hashanah. We don't discuss anything that we did. Rosh Hashanah is not about that. Yom HaDin is about the future, which means Hashem is looking to assess the person and to see what they need for the coming year. What zechut they should have. What opportunities they should have for the coming year. Should they live all together this coming year? What kind of life if they will live? How much visits they need to go to the hospital? How many people in their family need to get taken care of? It's going to take a lot of their time. All of what will come in the coming year, all the merits, you know, when a person is feeling good and his family is feeling good, that's a big zechut. Because it gives them the chance to learn more, to do more. When a person is busy taking care of this issue, that issue, whether it's his own personal issue, or it's his wife, or it's his children, or his grandmother, you don't have the zechut. You don't have the time. Everything is decided for the coming year. On Rosh Hashanah, it's the day of creation. and they're giving out on this day for the coming year. What will the person receive or not receive depending on his situation? But what are they looking at to determine that answer? What is it that they're looking to see? Well, what should we give this guy? You know, the biggest fan you have in the world is the Creator. If there's somebody in the stadium that's clapping for you and pushing you on, it's him. Probably you think your mother and father are those people. If there's a race that you're running and someone is rooting for you, you probably imagine your father and mother rooting you on. Go, go, do it. And even if you're not doing so well, they're there, go, come on. When there are big, big, big stars out there that are great players, the whole world's watching them. But as you get smaller and smaller, less people watch you. And if you get to the smallest, but you're really not that good, there are only two people that watch you. Your mother and father. Probably your father checks out at some point too. Only got your mother rooting you on. You have to imagine that the Creator of the world is more your fan than your own mother. He wants you to be Matzliach. So how does he decide? Well, just give me everything. It doesn't work like that. You're not capable. So what is he looking at? What's the barometer? Is he going to bring up the pan? No, he's not doing that. He's not looking at your past. It's not what this is about. He's not concerned about your past right now. He's concerned about your future. Is he going to look in the future and judge you on the future? No. Future didn't happen yet. He wants to know what to give you for the future, but he's not judging your future. So where is the judgment? The judgment is now. Yeah. Now, what can happen in Rosh Hashanah? What can I do on Rosh Hashanah? How many mitzvot can I do sitting in shul for 5 hours? How many tzedakah opportunities do I have? How many people can I help? How much Torah can I learn? What can I do Rosh Hashanah? On Rosh Hashanah, you can do everything. On Rosh Hashanah, it's all about your ratzon. It's all about what you want. It's all about a person who turns to the Creator and says, Hashem Melech, Hashem, you are my king. You are my king. He doesn't need you to coronate him. He doesn't need you to crown him. We say, Adon Olam Asher Malach, the master of the world that was a king, Beterem Kol Yetzir Nivra. Before there was a world, he was already a king. He doesn't need you. When you say Hashem Melech, it means Hashem, I'm ready to turn my neshama to a powerhouse neshama that's going to be dedicated to you. I'm ready to fulfill my mission in this world in the highest way. I'm ready to become your student. I'm ready to become your finest students. I want to hear what you want, and I'm ready. I'm in. Just tell me what I have to do. I may not know everything, but I'm all in. I just need to learn. That's a Rosh Hashanah. That's a Rosh Hashanah that makes for a tremendous year. A year of zechut. A year of opportunities. A year of growth. Baruch Hashem, for so many of us, this past year brought many, many beautiful opportunities. But there's so much in the king's warehouse. There's so much he can give us. There's so much that he can make of us. But it's got to start with our ratzon. On Rosh Hashanah, when a person says and really accepts upon himself such a mindset, it's already na'aseh nishma, it's done. It already happened. It's a guy who's ma'asav merubim mechokhmato. On Rosh Hashanah, they already see the guy's got a full, unbelievable mitzvot, how many things, he didn't do anything, he's Rosh Hashanah. No, he accepted it already. Once you accept, it's done. That's what the Pasuk says. I'll just end off by Korban Pesach, the first Korban Pesach in Egypt. Hashem commanded the Jewish people that on the 10th of the month, they should go and find the sheep, and they slaughter it on the 14th of the month. So on Rosh Chodesh, he's telling them what to do in 10 days and in 14 days from that. The Pasuk says after that, Vayelechu vayasu. And they went, I mean they heard, they went, and they did. Kasher tziva Adonai et Moshe ve'Aharon kenasu. They went and they did what God told them. Comes Rashi alav shalom and says, V'chi kevar asu? How could it be they went and they did? He told them to do it on Rosh Chodesh. They had to wait 10 more days. What do you mean they went and they did? No way. V'chi kevar asu? V'halo merosh chodesh ne'malech. He only told them to do this on Rosh Chodesh. Ella, says Rashi, mikevan shekibelu alehem. Once they walked out of the shiur, saying, I'm in. Ma'aleh alehem ke'ilu asu. How do you walk out of a shiur? How do you walk out of a class? How do you walk out when you hear something? That is all the difference. The failure doesn't happen after the class. In the time when things happen, it happens right then and there. How do you walk out of a shiur? They walked out, vayelechu vayasu. All in. The pasuk says, oh, they already did it already. Done. Just the time has to come for them to physically do it. But it's done. This is the great avodah that we have in life, and especially during these days. It's a avodah that brings such zechut, such merit that we will have, that Hashem should give us more and more and more opportunities to elevate ourselves and our families. Have a good day.